Grace, guess what day it is?
Oh.
It is Amazon Prime Day. Did you know?
What is that?
To fuck's sake.
Okay, that's good.
Like Black Friday.
But yeah, so the Dyson you've been talking about.
Stop. I'm literally going to purchase that while we're talking.
I think that they have Dysons on.
I want a Dyson more than I want, like, anything in the world.
Okay, I don't actually know if there's Dysons on Amazon, but there's heaps on sale I'm seeing right
this
now.
Is crazy.
The one I got is on sale for $249, which I know isn't a bargain, but
drop the link. There are some obscenely priced Dysons on here. £507.
Yeah, you don't need that.
Reduced from 580.
But what is also on there, which I know you've been flirting with the idea of, is a Vitamix. Vitamixes are on sale. I personally am trying to find a nice knife set that's chic and stylish and still being good knives, and I'm finding it impossible. There's a really good brand in the US called Material, and they just do like three chic knives.
Love.
But you can't ship them here. So
I think when in doubt, Japanese, good for knives. Chic, minimal, and sharp.
I know. I just want someone to tell me. Like, I just want there to be an article of, it's like, this is the knife that all the millennial women buy.
Yes.
Yeah. Vogue hasn't done an article on it. No one's done an article on it except for, like, Good Housekeeping. And
which
I don't trust them.
You are the chosen one.
And then every time...
Knife journalist.
And then every time I go to those articles about the knives on, like, whatever, Good Housekeeping, all the knives are, like... $40, and I know that price doesn't mean quality, but
you want it to be a bit more
cheap.
Yeah, a bit
I want
too
it
cheap
to be expensive.
Hundred maybe. Yeah
150, 200, I'll feel like I have a sharp enough knife.
I can see you with like one of those blocks that you sharpen them on.
Yeah, that makes my teeth feel funny, but
does
yeah
it? I quite like that. I don't like chalkboards, but I like a sharpened knife.
Actually, what I was going to do before you came over for some scent version of ASMR for you is put on some incense.
Ooh.
Do you like incense?
I think so. Yeah, it depends on the strength.
It makes me feel a bit headachy.
Same. There's a thin line.
Yes.
It's like a candle. Like when you put a candle in a bath and it's too much.
Yeah, I find incense far worse with the smokiness, but I try and put it on because it feels like a relaxing treat, and then get a headache and have to blow it out.
Yeah.
But I was gonna do that because I wanted to tell you about this piece that I wrote and how interesting it was, and it was about functional fragrances / scent, so like incense included, that basically, in the past few years, perfumers, forever, they've kind of been like, well, there's aromatherapy and all of those ways that people know that scent can manipulate our emotions. Like you dab lavender on your temples or whatever to go to sleep. But then in recent years, perfumers have been leaning into this so hard and working with all of these scientists to make fragrances that are functional. So when they say things like, I think Clinique in the 90s were one of the first to do it, and they released one called Happy. That was supposed to make you happy. And now there's brands like the New Co and Vireto, which was launched by Yasmin.
I was gonna say, is that Yasmin Sewell's brand?
Yeah.
So cool.
So she, for people who don't know, is actually from Australia originally, but has lived over here forever. And she like was really high up in fashion at all these different brands and just left Farfetch as like creative head of creative to launch this brand. And it's got, I think, 6 different fragrances, and each one of them is targeted to make you feel a certain way. So Witchy Woo, which is what that incense over there is, and they also have a fragrance is for creatives, and it's supposed to make you feel really creative. And we can put it on for the Patreon if and see what happens.
See if we change.
And they have one called, the one that just came out is called Sunray. And like in the marketing for it, it's so specific that they claim it's been scientifically proven to amplify self-confidence by 67% and joy by 25%, which sounds like crazy marketing lies, but there's actually like all of the science behind it, which is super interesting.
That is amazing. It makes so much sense as well, because there just is a difference in, I don't know, I think like living in a big city as well, I've been thinking a lot recently about all the way our senses are bombarded and how they're like making us anxious and sad without us being able to unpack why. And I think, I literally think like the constant thing of walking past like garbage cans, or like yesterday, I swear to God, outside of my house, these like obscene builders have been shouting things that would make anyone blush. Like they're literally heinous, and they have this giant, they were like pumping out this giant portaloo outside our house for like 20 minutes. And it was just so disgusting. And I was like, these things are just all going into my poor body and adding to me being depressed.
Yes, for sure.
So the opposite is you need to counter it with things that make you happy.
Yeah. Well, it's also really interesting because scent. So then I started getting really into learning about scent, and I went really off topic for this piece. And my day's editor was like, this is really interesting, but it's a whole different piece. So
yeah,
I'm going to take it all out. And I was like, okay. But I found this woman, this amazing Norwegian researcher and artist called Sissel Tolas. And she works with scent and smell. And she's had all of these crazy exhibitions of like scent exhibitions, essentially. And she explores how scent is like interwoven with culture and colonization and all of these different things. It's so interesting. But also the fact that scent is like, out of all of our senses, it's kind of the most overlooked, but it's the only one with a direct line to three of the most important areas of the brain, including the limbic system, which processes our feelings, our emotions, and our memory. And research shows that 75% of our emotions are reactions to scent. 75% of our emotions are reactions to scent.
This is so interesting.
It affects both concentration and memory recall, and people experience a 40% improvement in mood after being exposed to pleasant smells. So that's like so interesting. And now all of these perfumers from these new startup companies like the Nuco and Viredo, which I just talked about, are literally releasing scents. I think Addison Rae, her scents are like happy as fuck. Like chilled as fuck, are all tapping into this. But then also like heritage houses like Chanel and YSL are all doing it too and working directly with these scientists. And then I got on the blower to one of these scientists for 30 minutes, and it was so interesting what she was saying. And they're like using AI and stuff. So this company used an artificial intelligence program to create fragrances to increase concentration, music to all the ADD girlies' ears, during which they analyzed 1.9 million consumer responses to develop scents that trigger emotions associated with enhanced focus. And then this scientist woman, Julia, she was a little legend, talked about how so much of the time we're not aware of, like you say, the scents that are coming in, that our noses are working all of the time, and we're not aware that subconsciously that's happening. So a lot of the time, the scents that we make us feel relaxed or make us feel happy or make us feel calm have to do with like where we were brought up and what happened as children and like the specific region we live in. So a lot of the time the perfumers are trying to make a scent that'll make you feel relaxed, but that depends on what region of the world the people they're targeting grew up in. So like for us, lavender is associated with relaxation, but in Asia it's not at all, so it'll just be a different, another smell to them.
So
it's like this whole realm of associations and thoughts and feelings and connections. And she talks about, which is goes back to what you just said, she talks about how we ourselves, like we can use these perfumes obviously to like manipulate our emotions to make us feel more calm, but we can also do it with things like body, like any scent, anything in our lives, like body wash. So she uses different body wash Monday to Friday than she does on the weekend, because that body wash will trigger her mind into thinking she's going to work, versus the other one that will make her realize she's relaxed. And she was just like, there are just those specific little daily things you can do that actually like can really impact your yeah, mental well-being and emotions. It's quite crazy.
That is so fucking interesting. I'm obsessed with that. I want to learn more about that. I'm also, it reminds me of something I've been researching lately for a story, which is chromotherapy, like color therapy. And I've literally just started looking into it, but it's Kate wrote for Parfem an article about nail art and like,
yeah,
nail artists using color therapy in nail art basically to like help this similar idea, but like, I guess like less like profound in terms of how much we're consuming smells and we don't realize, but like different colors trigger different things in different people based on like all different experiences that they've had in their life. And this idea of like using, really actively using color in how you dress and how you kit out your home and how you like wear beauty to trigger certain feelings in yourself. It's just so special. Yeah. And it's like, women are just so amazing. The fact that we learn this shit and then go and create beauty brands to like incorporate,
I know,
healing into our lives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It literally made me be like, what the fuck have I been doing this whole time? What have I been doing this whole time? Not spraying myself with a scent that's scientifically proven to make me feel relaxed and focused and de-stress me. Like, there's actual science, because it feels so woo-woo. And then on TikTok, obviously, they're making it woo-woo. And they're, like, talking about how there's all that manifestation to it. You know, like, you'll spray yourself and someone will fall in love with you or whatever. So then I asked Julia if you could, because it is science, like, if you could make a scent that actually would make you more attractive to someone else. And she was just like, well, because we're all so different, like you say, each scent is based off the back of our previous experiences and the memories we hold toward the scent. You couldn't create a universal one that would attract anyone except vanilla. Like, you could use notes like vanilla, which are universally attractive to everyone. But she was like, if you had the brain scan science that they do of the person, or you knew every scent and smell they liked, you literally could.
Don't tell the girlies.
For the girlies. It's going to
be used for evil.
I know.
Hacking into
magic potions.
Their crushes brain scan. Yeah. But that pheromones is such a huge part of like sexual, like, as everyone knows. I wonder if it's the same for men. It must be.
What do you mean?
Like, if they feel, if the pheromones thing is the same.
I think it
to
is.
To them. Like, I associate like Zach, but also like every person I've been in love with. I feel like I can still remember like what they smell like,
yeah,
in this weird way.
Yeah. Well, yeah. A man said to me the other day, was like, he was just like, you just smell so good. Like, when you're not, he's just like, your smell is so good. And I was like, not to everyone, but to you, thank God.
Thank you.
but yeah. So the sixth of Vireto is for mindfulness and intuition.
Love.
Yeah. Witchy woo is courage and creativity. I am verdant for transformation and illumination. I also like her brand because hers, a lot of them lean into being very scientific. Like, the new co is just being like, this is the science. We have formulated this in a lab, like someone standing there, some like
a in a chic, coat, a lab chic coat.
Girl boss in a lab coat. And Vireto Yasmin's just like, this brand is built on vibes. I want you to like vibrate on a higher frequency. She, and I'm just like very into that.
Yeah. And she just does as well. Yeah. I feel like you just want to bottle whatever. Her yeah. Bottle her up her vibe. It's like, yeah, very smart. I love it. I just love these people as well, like her, that just have these a million different lives and careers over the course of time and like constantly reinvent themselves and just like follow their interests and passions, even if it's like a total left turn.
Yeah. And that's even, so cool. Even if so many people would just be like, cause she talks about Reiki, she talks about energy healing. They put like crystals in the Vireto bottles.
Mm.
And so many people in fashion would just be like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
And I love that she's just like, I don't give a fuck. I'm vibrating up here, bitches. Go to your silly little fashion weeks and cry over your lack of clothes. I'm like going to meditate in my garden of roses.
It's all about vibes.
It's all about vibes.
Love. On a totally opposite vibe note, I'm like so addicted to this podcast. Have you listened to it yet?
Yes.
Okay. It's called, it has the worst name.
The Retrievals.
The Retrieval. I don't like the name.
No.
It's an episode name.
You know? Yes. Yeah. Yes.
It's New York Times serial collaboration podcast. And it's about this. It's like such a horror story because I had dinner with a friend recently who was like, had like in a non freak out, annoying way, like in a really good way. It was just like, have you had your eggs counted before? If you're like worried about having children and all that stuff, you should just like book an appointment and see, because it gives you good peace of mind and it's like good to have information and like knowledge about you and your body.
Yeah.
But I'd had that conversation like 2 days before I started listening to this podcast, and it's about an IVF clinic at Yale, like literally Yale University in America. And it's so, so, so fucked up. This all is revealed in the first like 20 minutes. But basically all these women were going to get their like eggs retrieved to be frozen for IVF for like all variety of different reasons. And not all of them, but like a huge amount of them basically said that the experience of having their eggs retrieved was like the most excruciatingly painful, screaming out in pain experience. And they were all told that they were just weird and that it shouldn't feel like that. And that's not how most women felt. And then a lot of them had to go through it again and again and again, only to find out later that basically this nurse had been stealing the fentanyl.
This naughty nurse.
The naughtiest nurse to ever nurse. Like, I can't. Isn't her name Donna?
Her name is Donna, which is my mum's name for fresh listeners.
For the new listeners. Donna was stealing fentanyl and replacing it with literal salt water, like saline. And these poor fucking women were being told that they were being pumped with like the highest grade opiate, like opioid, to kill the pain.
And they were going through an invasive procedure where someone sticks a fucking prod up your vagina and pierces the through the vaginal wall to like pull eggs out.
Physically drag
and they were
eggs
going
out.
Through it, stone cold sober, not even on 2 Nurofen Plus, like stone cold sober. And the women were being like, one of them was like, I am so alert right now, I could drive a car.
Yeah.
I am completely sober. And the nurses and doctors in the room were just like, we've
including
given you
fucking Donna.
Sometimes Donna was there. And the nurses and doctors were in the room were being like, we've given you like the legal amount of painkiller that we can. We can't give you any more. Like, we don't understand what's happening, just breathe through it. They were, and the women were trying to stay still even though they were like writhing in pain so the doctors would be able to do the procedure. And obviously because this is IVF, it's like there's so many other layers to it than if it was just any old surgery. It's like the women were talking about how the fact that they're having to go through IVF a lot of the time was because like they had had miscarriages and they felt like they couldn't carry a baby. Mm-hmm. And so they already felt like their body was like failing them. So then when they were doing this wrong and everyone was looking at them as though it was their fault, they felt again like, oh, maybe it's me. Maybe I'm making this up. And it was so sad when that woman said afterwards, she talked to other people about how painful it was, and they'd do that like not even on purpose, but you know how kind of on purpose you're just like, oh, it wasn't sore
really?
For me,
like it wasn't
yeah
sore
like
for
oh
me.
I got a
wow.
tattoo and it
yeah.
didn't even hurt
yeah
like you know
totally.
And then they start, and then she just said that like shamed her into silence.
I think that's like what's so incredible about this series is that the story is outrageous and crazy, but what's really insane, I think what's beautiful about it is that like all the women, almost to a T, have a huge amount of empathy for the nurse, because like you just under like people who are, it's a terrible, terrible thing to do, but I think we as a culture understand enough about addiction to understand that like when you're addicted to something like fentanyl, you're not acting in a fucking sane, rational way. What is far more serious and concerning is that over the course of 2 years, this many women could be in that much pain, separate cases, saying it again and again to doctors, and that no one flagged that there could be a problem, because every single person who's in a fucking medical profession, whose job it is to like care for people first, it wasn't like the alarm bells never went off that maybe these women were telling the truth and something was wrong. It was like just assumed every single time, again and again and again and again, that they were exaggerating or they were making a big deal over nothing, or like. And just the way that the mental gymnastics that the women went through individually to say, like you said, my body must be defective. There must be something wrong with me. Blaming themselves and not fighting harder to advocate for themselves because of this thing that women do all the time, where you're so scared to make a fuss and like whatever, take up space, make demands. It's just infuriating. It made me so angry, like, listening to it.
I know.
I think because, like, we can all just recognize that we would probably act in the same way and ourselves.
They were what was the craziest part for me. And also, it sounds like we're ruining the podcast, but we're really not, because Grace told me all of this before I listened. And just listening to it, it's you're still like gripped because you're hearing all of the stories in real time and it's produced in such a incredible way. But yeah, the thing that caught me was it was like they detailed this horrific pain. And then, as you say, so many people, IVF doesn't work the first time. You're going through rounds and rounds of IVF. Mm-hmm. It's already so stressful. You're already pumping your body full of hormones. One of the women said, I cried. What'd she say? That I texted you? I cried at the wind. And I was like, me when I'm not on hormone treatment. Like, your body is fucked. Sometimes insurance doesn't cover it.
It's like 15K fucking go. It's often after like months or years of like
miscarriages.
Huge stress and trauma of trying to get pregnant and struggling or miscarriages or
And then you go into the room, and this is supposed to be the part that you don't feel pain, and this is supposed to be the part where you're excited because you've finally gotten to that point, because for so much of that process you're like trying to get your eggs ready or whatever to be taken out, so you're like injecting yourself and doing all the hormones and all of that. They go into the room, they think this is the exciting day, the eggs are going to get retrieved, and they are in horrific pain. Then it doesn't work, and for so many of them they went back to the same clinic and did it again.
Someone went 8 times and didn't have fentanyl a single time. Like, it's literally like medieval fucking torture.
Yeah.
And it's just infuriating. And I think it speaks as well. It just speaks to so many, I think, of like women's anxieties and that question around pregnancy and childbirth and this like tension point that we just have as a society around women as like, I don't know, women as mothers, and the way that it's supposed to be such a noble thing that it trumps so many other things, and that you should be able to sacrifice and you should be able to go through pain and you should give up all of these things in your life and you shouldn't be selfish because you should be maternal, and that you should like suffer for your children, even if that means trying to get pregnant in the first place. It just reminds me of stuff like I was talking to a friend recently about like the rise in people who just have like schedule cesareans for their childbirth, basically, and they like schedule it so it's like a little bit earlier than they're probably going to go into labor. They're induced, they don't feel anything, they come out of it and whatever, and people usually have to have private healthcare to do that, so people are calling it like too posh to push, which is like funny, but at the same time you're just like, that should be accessible to everyone. But if there's a form of healthcare that allows women to not have to go through like 18 to 30 hours of excruciating pain and to go through this experience without that and then emerge with a child, why is there judgment about
people judge everything? People judge people for using an epidural, like,
yes,
crazy.
Fully, 100%. People like,
well, like my friend was talking about how she wants to try and do it without an epidural, and I was like, why? Like, is it harmful to the baby? Why? Like, why the fuck would you want to do it without an epidural? And she was like, I don't know. Like, people just liken it to competing in running a marathon. I was like, it's not like running a fucking marathon, because running a marathon you're doing like months of training, and with this it's like, yes, your body's prepping for it, but like, absolutely fuck that without
It's like one of the, it's like with everything else, with science developing like medicine to make things easier, like fucking amputations and like all of this shit, pregnancy and childbirth remains one of these weird things where people get weird and judgy about medical intervention in this way that is like suggesting you're not being like a natural enough woman, or you're putting your...
Yeah, or like surrogate stuff as well.
Yeah, surrogate stuff is such a huge part of that.
Oh my god, put a baby in a goddamn like...
tank.
Frozen chamber. Tank for me. I don't give a shit.
Exactly. The surrogate thing is so interesting because it's like, I get it so much why you would do it, but it's like a system that's just contingent on like rich women paying poor women, poorer women to have their kids.
I know.
But there is weird judgy shit within that. Like, if you actually fucking need a surrogate, which a lot of people do, feeling like to be a legitimate mother, you have to go through excruciating pain.
Yeah.
That's
this
weird
thing. Or to
have it
in your body, yeah.
Yeah. It's really interesting and strange.
Mm. I find that a similar thing to that of like adoption in a way. Like, I kind of feel like I can't get my head around. I understand. I don't feel it myself, but I do understand for sure that, like, maternal, motherly, like, animal instinct to want to have your own baby out of your own DNA and, like, with the person you love. Like, I, of course, get that.
Mm-hmm.
And to, like, raise a cute little mini me. Like, very cute. But I also am just like, and, you know, obviously that's why so many people struggle for so long through, like, rounds of IVF. It's like, if you didn't really fucking want this, you would not go 8 times into a room on no fentanyl and get egg retrieval. But I think it's just so funny because I'm like, well, there are so many kids in the world that need parents.
Yeah.
That are just alive, or like little babies that you can adopt. Obviously, it's not an easy process, but I just feel like it's such a weird thing that it's not a conversation. Like, no one ever talks about adoption. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, if you can't have a kid, then you're like, oh, I just can't have a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, there's this other realm, there's this other route you could go down that would mean you could be a mother. Like, it's, I'm just thinking of it in like a similar vein of like, people judging if you use a surrogate and you don't have it in your own stomach.
Yeah, it's like a naturalistic fallacy or whatever. Yeah,
yeah.
100%.
Because then we could all have babies at like 40 and 50. Obviously, I know it's not super easy and it's like there's money and like stress involved with that in a different way to like just to actually getting yourself pregnant, which...
But even even that thing, like, it's so funny how you talk to people, like that conversation I was having with someone about eggs and egg retrieval, they were like, oh my God, don't even think about having kids soon. You're so young. And it's like, I'm about to turn 30. And the common consensus with most other people I talk to is like, you got to think about having kids soon if you want them because yada, yada, yada. And I think there is still, I have just picked up on in conversations, if I started saying to people, I think I'm just going to get my eggs frozen. And I actually don't think I want to start trying to have kids till I'm like 36. I just know, I can pre-feel the amount of judgment and shit that people will say. And like, it's just... It's very funny that as much as we've progressed as a society, there is still this huge hang up about motherhood and like seeing scientific and medical intervention as like illegitimate or not. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's something about it. And I think that's why this IVF thing is, these women have all internalized such a narrative about themselves and like see themselves as defective or see themselves as like... bad, and you know what I mean? I think that accepting that pain is like to do with that narrative.
I know.
Which it's... makes me so sad.
Yeah. And the way Yale handled it all is so fucked up. So yeah, highly recommend. I listened to both of the two episodes this afternoon when I was...
Yes, the third's coming around. Out tomorrow. But I'm like, what else are they going to do? They've like given too much away in the first three episodes.
Yeah. How long can it last? I guess they'll do like the court trial maybe.
Yeah, but I'm just like, women are just so funny to me in how amazing we are. Like, this woman, the nurse, put all these women through like unimaginable pain and trauma. And she basically straight away was like, admitted it, said, I'm guilty, wrote this like really detailed open letter about how she has a fucking, of course, I was like, this woman has a piece of shit husband. And like, lo and behold, I was like, the blame for this somehow actually lies with the man.
Yeah.
She was living with this hideous, heinous man to the point where he got really bad COVID and friends of hers were like, we were all hoping he'd die in the hospital because he was so like emotionally and it sounds like physically abusive, threatening with the children, all of this stuff, drove her basically to the edge of like a nervous breakdown. She gets addicted to drugs. She's putting these women through all this pain. She immediately apologizes and accepts like a jail sentence, writes this really nuanced, thoughtful letter about addressing the damage that she's done and blah, blah, blah. And then all the women that were victims of it say, I don't want her to go to jail, write letters asking the judge to give her a pardon, like have really nuanced understandings of addiction and like the criminal justice system and why criminalizing drug use isn't right. And it's just amazing. I just think women are just so evolved.
I know. I also found it was so interesting because one of the women who was having the egg retrieval worked in... like drug, what was it? She works as a drug
lawyer or something. Yeah.
And so she, wrote this really passionate letter just being like, I can't speak for any other women, obviously, or what they want to do. But I don't think that people should be jailed for drug offences. And I was like, that's really interesting. I hadn't like thought about that properly.
Yeah.
But yeah, so clever.
So clever. Women equal so evolved. Men, aka Jonah Hill, equal pretending to be evolved to be assholes to women.
To fucking emotionally and coercively control women.
I can't.
This. I take back everything we said in that Stutz episode. I'm pretty sure we said we'd fuck him.
We, yeah.
He obviously wouldn't fuck us given, given our thotty photos.
I know. This, like... I think the reason this has just gone so viral is because every woman is like, has had this gut feeling like men are pretending to go to therapy, but they're not really going to therapy. Like they're not really getting it.
Yes.
And this has this tiny micro arc of Jonah Hill is just in a nutshell, men.
It's
right now.
It's hilarious. I was like, the men are wilding out because it happened, which we'll talk about after, but it happened the same fucking weekend as Keke Palmer's boyfriend went crazy at her for wearing an outfit to Usher. But yeah, Jonah Hill. So as everyone's probably across, it took me a while to get across. I seen the memes before I understood what was going on.
I saw the meme being like my perfect summer, and then it was like the list of all the things he banned. I was like, what is this?
His ex-girlfriend Sarah Brady, who's this surf instructor, basically alleged that he was emotionally abusive during their relationship, and she shared the screenshot of texts from Jonah Hill on Friday and Saturday, and then just shared some more today.
Yes. It's giving chaotic.
It's giving Instagram chaotic. I know.
Presence, yeah, but we love it.
I know. Well, we were talking about like the other day we met for coffee, and Grace was like, I don't know about like sharing this whole bunch of messages from like a relationship you were in 2 years ago online. Like
it sets a dangerous precedent. I'm like, we're all happy we've seen it because it gives us so much to talk about, and it's like tea and it's funny and it's also fucked up. And
but it's also hopefully a learning thing to like a lot of people as well. You know, it should be a learning about like how therapy speak is being.
Like, exactly. Like it's all it's of this like stuff. Text that spawn 1,000 think pieces, but just from a total objective standpoint, I do think there's something off about sharing screenshotted text. I don't think any context would change the nature of those texts. Like I don't think there's some weird alternative context that would make what he said okay. I just think like if we're all being honest with ourselves, like the most fucked up messages we've sent a partner or our partner from a place of like insecurity or like having a shitty day or just acting irrationally or being drunk. Like, I just think that in itself is a slippery slope.
Yeah. And then I was talking about how she obviously they broke up. She's like left it. She's been thinking about this for a while. And then what really topped it off was the Stotts documentary on Netflix where Jonah Hill sits opposite this therapist. I need to know what Stutz are thinking right now.
My estimations of Stutz have gone down drastically. If he can't help being Jonah Hill's therapist, but I'm like, why are you sitting doing a documentary if you know that your like client is not okay? But maybe he doesn't. We'll present a certain.
Exactly. That's what I mean. I just find it so crazy because I'm like, he could go to therapy and say all the right stuff about how he understands all of this stuff and then just go out and not action it in the real world at all. And that's what's scary about it. That's what's the manipulative part, because it's like, it's not like he's this dumb idiot that doesn't understand what he's doing. He's like using what he learns in therapy to go back to her and turn it around on her and say that she's being, what was it that he said today?
A thought.
She's being a thought for wearing a bikini when she's in her surfing videos because she's a surfer. And what's really, really funny about that is he slid into her DMs off the back of one of those videos, and that's how they fucking first started talking. So he literally was the seedy guy who slid into her DMs.
So there's a lot within this that I want to talk about, but just to give Jonah Hill the benefit of the doubt, is that I think it's very possible this very obviously reads as him like intentionally misusing therapy speak to like coercively control and manipulate her. I think what's more likely is he was like earlier on in his therapy journey and was just misusing terms he was getting for very selfish purposes, which has the same kind of effect. But I think it would be less sinister than we're reading it, and more about just like when you're that much of an entitled man, you just do, like when you're early on in your therapy journey, I can just understand cherry picking theories that you don't understand that well and trying to use them in your life, because we are all guilty of this. People do this on TikTok all the time, like having one fucking revelation and then acting like they're the god to teach everyone about X, Y, or Z to do with mental health. Like, you know how the phrase like self-awareness became a thing a few years ago, and then like the least self-aware people you knew on Instagram yeah. would be like self-aware blah blah blah, like they just yeah. learned the word, but they're yeah. not they don't actually understand what it is.
Yeah.
I feel like that's, I would like to think he's probably developed since then, maybe not, but the end result is still worth women talking about because it's such a fucking thing that yeah. happens.
Yeah, so the main ones were him saying the boundaries thing, which was really, like, basically saying that these are his boundaries in a relationship, and if she can't respect that, then she needs to leave. And the boundaries are, like, her not talking to basically any men, her not hanging out with her party friends other than to get a coffee, which I found so funny, her not posting any, like, surfing videos of her in a bikini, her deleting them all from her Instagram, like, so the most crazy shit that it's not, like, that's not boundaries.
No, that's...
Like, as in, wait, I saw this really good text thread about it where it was, like, your boundaries are to do with yourself, not... putting them on, like, mm-hmm. he's just controlling another person and saying, these are my boundaries. But it's like, that's not your
boundary. His boundary would be like, I'm not going to DM a girl who, like, has an Instagram page like this because I know it's going to trigger my insecurities and anxieties. So I'm not going to pursue a relationship with her in the first place. Yes,
exactly.
Like, that's a boundary.
Yes.
The boundary is not, I'm going to do all of that and then make her completely change her personality so I feel more comfortable.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is just fucking, it's like the most, I think the reason like women are just jumping on this so much because it's like everyone knows that experience. There was that Trevor Noah quote that was going around about how like men are so attracted to independent women that like have their own lives going on and do their own thing and have loads of friends and have a career and aren't that interested in them and are kind of sexy and exciting. They're who they want to date. And then as soon as they start dating them, they don't want them to be like that anymore because they know that's who other men want to date as well. So yeah. they go about shutting that shit off about them. And it's so, like, I know the word triggering is really overused, but I think that's what so many women responded to was, like, we know that feeling of you meeting a guy and all the reasons that he was interested in you, he then, like, uses against you afterwards.
Mm-hmm. He said she can't model.
And he goes, if you find that a fulfilling job, it's like, fuck off.
You're a fucking actor.
You're a fucking actor, firstly. And, like, why do you think you slid into her DMs before knowing? Like...
Yeah.
Ugh.
Like, saying... Oh, my God. So, yeah.
So, can we bring in the CGI kiss? Because is the insinuation that he did the CGI kiss in that movie...
What's the CGI kiss?
Do you remember he was in a movie and, like...
No, what's the... What are you talking about, though?
When Jonah Hill... was in that movie and it went viral because the kiss with his lead character had been so obviously CGI'd.
Oh, I don't know. But who's talking about it?
So he says in some of the texts he's talking about, she says, well, you have to kiss like beautiful women as part of your job. Like, I think we can be mature enough to know that like me talking to a guy when I'm in a bikini doing my job, you can trust me. Like I can trust you doing blah,
yes,
blah, blah.
Yes, I didn't even see this exchange, but yes, Sarah.
And then he said something like, he didn't say we're CGI-ing the kiss, but he said something about maybe I'm not comfortable with that or something. And then the kiss from that movie that he was shooting that she was talking about was CGI'd. And it was it went viral at the time because everyone was like, why? Is that a COVID thing or what? But I'm like, maybe he just did do that. Like, he just sounds like such a little baby. I'm going to WhatsApp it.
Plain and simple, if you need surfing with men... boundaryless inappropriate friendships with men, what does that mean? like boundaryless and inappropriate. She's
that's,
like clearly
that's
not...
how I define Zach being friends with like any woman.
Great.
No, I don't. I don't. But I do. This is what I mean. It's like
that's so funny though, because it's like you want him to be friends with women.
I want him to be friends with women that like I know and I'm friends with. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I guess it's kind of different for you because you guys are. It's kind of different for you because you guys have been together for so long and it's not like he... It's like if he made new random friends with women now...
Exactly.
Who he just met and then was friends with, it would feel weird, I guess. But I guess because my boyfriend has like so many friendships with women, like literally all of his best friends are women, it doesn't feel weird at all.
Yes.
And then also then he'll make new friendships with women and I don't think it's a weird... I don't think it's... I'm always like, oh, who's that? If it's like a random name I've never seen texting him. But he'll just be like, oh, she's just a girl I met in like New York and now we're friends.
Yeah, I think that's...
It's also to do with his job, I guess.
It's to do with your job. It's to do with your personality. Like you say, when you meet someone... Like when I met Zach, any of his female friends, like friends through his sisters or through his like friends' girlfriends, then I met them all just as friends and now like
we're all friends,
you know? And if he obviously went out and like... had dinner or coffee with them, whatever, it wouldn't be a big deal. But like, I do feel, and maybe this is like my own problem, but like, I don't even know. I think I'm thinking of specific examples where your like feminine instinct kicks in.
Yeah.
It's like something off.
Yeah.
I don't think any friendships with women is weird, but I do have that like old school when Harry met Sally thing of like, if Zach met a female coworker that he really, really got on with and they spent a lot of time, just the two of them hanging out, in the way that I would a new female friend, I would find it strange.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I am Jonah Hill. I stand with Jonah Hill. No.
To post pictures of yourself in a bathing suit, to model, to post sexual pictures, friendships with... This is funny. Friendships with women who are in unstable places and from your wild recent past beyond getting a lunch or a coffee or something respectful. I'm not the right partner for you if these things bring you to a place of happiness. I support it and there will be no hard feelings. These are my boundaries for a romantic partnership. So like literally saying that she can't model and she can't surf with men.
Yeah, he's literally like...
Or hang out with women or hang out with men.
He's listing every single part of her life. It's like her job, her hobby, her,
friendships.
Her friendships.
Yeah.
And it's really fucked up. And it's that thing of, like, the Madonna whore complex thing of, like, men are interested in you for your sexuality and your attractiveness and then they punish you for it at the same time, or they punish you for liking or buying into how you look or your attractiveness. It's just so fucking classic. And it's so unevolved. And that's why it's so... Like, the average fucking Joe Blow on the street, I think, has a more sophisticated... Maybe not, but like, I don't know. I just, the amount of men who would never think to make a documentary claiming how evolved they are, who have more evolved thinking about women, is insane.
It's so naughty. Oh yeah, I found this tweet. So it was just being like, rule is a restriction that either you place on someone else or someone else places on you. Agreement, something that two people decide on together. Boundaries made by you and apply to your behavior only. And then she said basic stuff covered in the Multi-Amory podcast boundaries episode, which I want to listen to.
Yeah.
And they're not ultimatums either, boundaries.
No.
Like, you know what I mean? You can't be like, if you don't do this, I'm leaving.
Exactly.
Sorry about the...
I know.
Drilling now.
The power drilling.
Do you know what happened the other day? It's so crazy. Went to a dinner. Work dinner. Sitting beside a girl. Talking to her for ages. La, la, la. Whatever. She's like a cool stylist, was really nice. She talks about how she's bought a house and is renovating it. We keep chatting. I say what like Amada's for work. She thinks her husband might know him because they work in a similar field. She leaves. She texts me 10 minutes later and goes, wait, do you live on this road? Hear that banging? That's her house right there. She lives there.
Next door.
I've met her husband.
That
it
is
was
really
so
cute.
Crazy.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's
and she was like, I bought the house next door. And then I couldn't because I was drunk. It was like, I could not figure out how she knew that when we never talked about. Also, it would have been solved in like 2 seconds in person if I'd talked about living in like this area.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then I couldn't figure out how the fuck she figured out that I live here because I was like, what? And it turns out my boyfriend's mum has been blabbering on to her husband. Oh. And so her husband knows everything about us, but we didn't know anything about them. And so her husband goes, "That's our neighbors." So crazy. Wow, and then I saw him the next morning walking really hungover, like walking from the convenience store to my house, and was just like, hello. And kept walking inside. I was like, it's really cute that they're neighbors, but also it's quite intense. Like, I was walking around this morning, you can kind of see into each other's houses, sort of.
Yeah.
And I like got home because it's so hot outside and immediately took all of my clothes off my body the minute I walked inside, which I do all the time, so I'm such a sweaty girl. And then walked into the kitchen and just had a bra on and was like, oh fuck, like they can like probably see me. I quite like having
yeah a bit of privacy,
or just distance. If there's not privacy, if it's a random looking at your tits, not like
yeah
a semi-colleague's husband. Mm-hmm. Hot husband, may I add.
Really?
I mean, she's gorgeous, so I was like, that has to be her husband.
Yeah, nice. A small world. It's a small world after all.
And then the other thing about them being the neighbors is then I just wasn't up for a little chat at all. I was so hungover. Yeah. She left early, so she would have been like probably fine the next day. And I was like an actual hungover monster. And I was like, you just need to be this weirdly, this area, which is like the middle of nowhere residential, like further than you from the center of the action. And there's weirdly like a bunch of different people who live on this block,
yeah.
And you just see people around.
That's the problem about
society.
I don't know what society about. Yeah, like the London thing. There is a bit of a like villagey thing in London where you just walk, like people cluster in certain areas, and then you cannot walk without bumping.
Whenever
into people,
I'm in
you know.
Your, whenever so Grace and I, which is really cute. When I'm in London, we live like literally a 20-minute walk door to door, which is so special because London's so massive. But whenever I'm in your area, which is like kind of 10 minutes further along from her house, and I usually go like, me and Grace have this cute little area we're always in together, but if I venture further in, every single time I'll see like one of your mates.
Yeah,
I saw like four in a row. I saw four in a row the other day, and like one of them was being really funny, and he bought this watermelon. The watermelon was £3 and he was just like eating it in front of us, talking about how much money he was inhaling.
Yeah, it literally is, it's like a little Australian village.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous. It is I really like it. I think it's a really nice thing, but yeah, sometimes you don't feel like a chat. I actually often don't feel like a chat.
No, neither. I'm always in a rush.
Yeah,
or in my brain like thinking about stuff. And I said the other day, Amar kept talking to me. He just kept talking and talking, and I was like, I don't know, often when I'm quiet I'm like deep in thought about something, or like not even deep in thought, but I need there's
yeah.
shit going on in
Isabel
this
land.
This morning,
mine's Graceland.
Yeah, this morning I was just like, oh my god, I'm trying to think and you just won't stop fucking speaking. And he goes, that's how I feel 90% of the time. But yeah, like often when I'm out and about, or if I see someone, I'm just never, I want to be one of those people that leaves the house looking nice, just as in not looking nice, but like putting on an outfit that if someone saw you in it, you would be okay with it. Yeah. But I never like that,
it's
Grace.
It's not who we are. Okay, this is my theory. 20s are about trying to change every single thing about yourself. And that's okay. That's like experimentation, figure out who you are, trying things, seeing what works, changing your look, changing your vibe. I spent a lot of my 20s being like wanting to get on top of bad habits, wanting to self-improve, wanting to blah, blah, blah. 30s are about just leaning into who you are and just being like, we tried to change and the things that are still here is just your reality.
That's very true. But for things like going to the nail salon 10 minutes up the road, just why doesn't my brain work in a way where it's like, just put on this, like, you look so cute right now. Which I know you don't look all the time when I see you, because yesterday you looked like unhoused when I met you for coffee.
I literally was unhoused. It was crazy.
Like a big fucking
a giant
cardigan,
literal
Ugg
boots. And Zach's climbing shorts.
Yeah.
And unbrushed hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just like put on, I
feel like you always look cute.
I feel like
together.
I have an amalgamation of just like random crap, like too much crappy stuff that you can then put together to create an outfit. Whereas I feel like Amar, for some reason, or like maybe it's just men in general, have more plain, it's like a capsule wardrobe in a way of more plain stuff. So even if he's grabbing, I mean, he can look fucking crazy, but usually if he's grabbing like trousers and then a t-shirt and then like a jacket, it all just looks cohesive because everything is quite similar. Whereas for us and for women and for the girlies, there's a lot of sparkles, there's a lot of crazy stuff going on. And if I have like 5 minutes to get ready and throw on anything that comes to, and that's why I think we wear exercise clothes so much.
Yes. Because
it's like, okay, just put on leggings, put on sneakers and put on a hoodie and out the door.
Yes. I also think what's hard for us, I agree, because Zach is the same. I feel like he always just looks correct when we go out on the street to get a coffee.
Yeah.
In a way that I don't know how to.
Yeah.
Like I put on a jacket and a skirt the other day. And he was like, are you going somewhere special? And I was like, no. Why can't I get this right? But I also think there's something about growing up in London, because I think we don't.
No, yeah.
That is the culture of dress. There's a certain way people dress in London that is like understated and cool. Whereas in Sydney,
Hastings, Hawke's Bay.
Hastings, like in Sydney especially, that fucked with my head, because that is a cult. And it's not Sydney. It is kind of Sydney in general. It's also work. But like, people dress up a lot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
People dress up more. People wear heels. People, like, there's just more of that culture. So I think we're also like not really equipped to know what we're doing over here. I feel the same in LA. Like, I feel very confused about how to dress in LA.
No one knows what to do in LA. Not even anyone from LA. Okay. We must go. We're going straight to Patreon right now.
To the Patreon and beyond. Bye.
Bye.